Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Okta. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Federal agencies, by mandate and by inclination, have been working to improve their online digital services. Improvement brings greater economy and efficiency, and also improves customer experience. One element important to both is up-to-date identity and credential management, and maybe getting past passwords. I talked about this with a leading information security specialist at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Ross Ford. Set the scene for us. You have a long history in this. You probably go back to when we called it computer security.
I do. And I'm really lucky. I've worked in the government in a number of different guises. Here at CISA, it's probably the most rewarding I've been in. And I'll talk a little bit about what I'm doing. So I work for a couple of different programs in CISA, and it's in the cybersecurity division. The first is the CDM program, which probably many of your audience will recognize. That's a continuous diagnostic and mitigation program. And on that program, I've been the identity, credentialing, and access management SME, and also helping with Zero Trust. And then there's a group that is the Center of Excellence for the Capacity Building Branch in a division in CISA. And I'm also an ICAM SME and a Zero Trust Architect there. So those are the things that keep me busy during the day, and those are my expertise.
And what's your feeling about how ICAM and identity and credentialing and this whole complex of technical pieces actually adds up to digital delivery, which is really the ultimate goal of all of this?
Yeah. You know, there's really a lot of different aspects to digital delivery, and everything centers on knowing the person that you're going to be delivering the services to, having some context for doing that, and it differs between whether the services are being delivered to the public or citizens that are trying to acquire benefits from the government, or as a lot of the work I do is within the government and helping different agencies, you know, be able to deliver digital services to their own constituency, right? Which might be partners, it might be other folks inside of their organization. So let me take a little bit and let you know how I fit into all those different aspects. The CDM program provides services for the federal government, the .gov, and we help agencies do some IDAM services, ICAM services through that program. In addition, CISA has a responsibility for helping OMB talk to agencies about cybersecurity. And in that regard, you know, I help OMB's messages get explained to government agencies. And then more broadly, the whole notion about, you know, how do we secure the greater digital experience that people are experiencing. There's a lot of conversations we have. There are some services that I'll talk about later that are, you know, quite useful that are across the federal government. And I kind of have a little bit of to play in each of those different areas.
In many ways, CISA is to cybersecurity as GSA is to procurement. You provide it government-wide, but you also have to buy your own stuff, too.
Exactly right. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned GSA because they're a really strong partner in what we do. The federal identity architecture it's posted on a site that GSA operates. They operate the Office of Government-Wide Policy, and the FICAM architecture comes out of their office. And we work really closely with that office to make sure that when CISA is implementing some ICAM services or talking to agencies about how the right way to deliver those ICAM services, we're making sure that the FICAM office is the one that's leading that conversation and that we're fulfilling the needs that they've already expressed. Of course, there's times when we need to give them feedback too about things that we need to do that we're realizing as we're working with agencies or actually even more broadly with partners or even the citizens community that we interact with. CISA does have all those constituents, right? We offer services that go direct to the public. And in this past year, we've been really active in trying to get information that at CISA.gov, just all kinds of people can go to, whether you're professionals that are working in the cybersecurity field, or whether you're just someone sitting at home trying to figure out how to do something to protect their local devices, right? CISA publishes information that in regards to that. We also help OMB get their messages out, and we've published some strategies, zero trust maturity model and other things that we help get the message out for OMB.
And let's get down to a little bit of brass tacks here. What are some of the technical strategies now, not only to provide good identity and access management, because you can do that in a way that will drive people crazy, and as the old saying goes, they'll find a way around it if you do. So to have state-of-the-art security in that particular aspect, but also so it's seamless to people, or at least less friction than they might be used to.
Yes. So why don't I start, you know, it's a pretty broad question. So I'm going to start from the context of the workforce, because that is where we've been doing an awful lot of work, is helping employees and contractors that are working in the federal government have a better experience at doing that. It's been particularly important, not only for CISA, but the entire, you know, all companies have had to try to adapt to doing different work, different ways, brought upon by COVID, right? And every agency's had to, you know, to make modifications to the way they worked, including the foundational element that the federal government has relied on for so many years, which has been a really great thing to rely on, and that's the PIV card. But a lot of people weren't able to either get new PIV cards when they started work, or if they had a PIV card that expired, they had to use other alternatives, right? So in concert with OMB, and really in fulfillment of a zero trust architecture, we've been helping agencies think about how to use not only their PIV card, where they can't use the PIV card, where it's not practical to do that, what other kind of tokens can they use to get access to the services they need in a secure manner? And we're being really clear about that those things should be phishing resistant authenticators, right? One of the characteristics of the PIV card is that it is not susceptible to phishing. And there are other tokens that you can acquire primarily from an organization called Fast Identity Online or FIDO that provides phishing resistant authenticators. So we're making sure that in the federal enterprise, people have phishing resistant authenticators. Now, let's talk about outside of the federal space and where we interact with constituents, partners. We don't have the same ability to give them the same kind of a quality of a token. But what we can do is we can offer them those options. And there's been a lot of emerging technology in the last couple of years around that. I think a lot of people have heard passkeys, and passkeys are a new phishing resistant technology. They're going to be delivered. There's still a lot of work and adoption that has to be done around that. But those are the kind of things that when we're looking at how citizens can interact with the government, you know, the primary citizen focused single sign-on capabilities the government uses are already adopting those FIDO tokens and those services that CISA doesn't operate, but we know they do a good job and we interact with these, are login.gov, which is a government service, and ID.me, sure, which is a service also that serves citizens' access to many different applications and services that the government provides.
What is the mechanism for these, if it's not a PIV card or a FIDO device, what is the mechanism for phishing resistance that is available to the broad group of people?
So I mentioned FIDO itself specifies how you can use devices to help authenticate securely in a manner that's not phishing. And you know, biometrics is sometimes a part of that. There's also a set of keys. I use some security keys. They're little devices that I plug into my laptop or plug into my phone. And they give me another level of assurance that I'm and that can't be spoofed, right? So those primarily it's FIDO mechanisms that organization that's developed those protocols have established. And I think I mentioned that these passkeys they're kind of new. They're a lower assurance capability, but they're a platform authenticator, and it allows you to operate within like an Apple domain or within Microsoft's domain. You can move from device to device using those passkeys. And like I say, they're not yet appropriate for use for enterprises, but they certainly are appropriate, I believe, for use by civilian population to make their lives easier and not having to remember as many passwords.
And can agencies invoke login.gov and offer it to citizens trying to do things, whatever the agency offers,
yeah,
in a seamless kind of way? My own personal experience was I had a login.gov access account for something I had to renew with the federal government, and no, it wasn't parole. And it was just login.gov, and it happened kind of seamlessly, and I was able to renew that card with no problem.
Yeah, Login is a good partner, and then they're continuing to improve their capabilities, and they'll offer more services over time, right? I actually, quite frankly, I don't know the right way to engage them, but I'm sure they're on their site. If you have an application at an agency that you're trying to help get access to them, I'm sure you can do that. I use login.gov and a couple of different government services that I, you know, when I go to them, I think USA Jobs is one of them. I think at the VA.gov, I'm a veteran. So I think when I go into VA, I can use either login or I can use ID.me. And they're both great services, and they've helped me, you know, really ease my experience as both a citizen, even though I am a government employee.
Sure. And we haven't said it outright, but the implications of what you've described seem to get the world at last past the password.
It's probably going to take a while to be passwordless. A lot of the capabilities we have are multi-factor authentication. One of those factors are passwords. But I do think, you know, that as these technologies evolve, and they are evolving quickly, it's a very active community trying to create new secure methods of helping digital identities work in the world. And I think that's going to continue. I don't think we've seen the end. You know, this isn't the end all be all, right? This is just, and it's an important evolution because people access so many services these days, right?
Yeah, so the biometric, though, you mentioned that, too, that's making a comeback. That seemed to almost go to a side railing for a few years. Yeah. And now some, like the new MacBooks, for example, are shipping again with a fingerprint reader. We haven't seen that in a long time.
You know, technology has helped in that regard, right? I was talking to a colleague of mine about, for instance, some of the newer laptops. The cameras they have are quite advanced, and they can do infrared as well as just getting an image, getting your image. And that infrared really reduces the ability for somebody to like fake their access to that system, right? And those cameras are, you know, in the newest cases, they're observing you as you sit down at your machine, and so they can authenticate you easily because they're watching you come to that device, right? I think you're going to see a lot of evolution of these technologies, because the technologies have really improved and they're taking the feedback they've learned over the years of doing this, right? I mean, when I first started in government, I did do some biometrics, but it was, you know, put my hand on a finger, on a palm reader, right, and get access to a facility. That certainly has advanced with the use of not only laptops, but even the mobile devices have really capable biometric capabilities in them.
Ross Ford is an IT and information security specialist at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
The executive order on cybersecurity is a big step towards securing our nation through zero trust. It starts with identity, and Okta leads the way with a modern FedRAMP authorized identity cloud that supports NIST, CISA, and other zero trust standards. Okta centralizes identity and access, delivers strong multi-factor authentication, and integrates all your technologies with a vendor-neutral approach. Learn more at okta.com/fedzerotrust. That's okta.com/fedzerotrust.
Welcome back to our interview with Ross Ford, an IT and information security specialist at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Our topic is identity and credential access management and better online service. And let's talk about the cloud for a moment, because that seems to be emerging. We've been talking about the authentication and access piece, but the management of identities has to be kind of the foundational piece in there. And as applications are hosted in the cloud, and as especially federal applications have nationwide constituencies, and many agencies have worldwide employee bases, it seems like it's more logical to move identity, perhaps, management to the cloud as opposed to trying to maintain this on your own server for a lot of reasons. What's your thought there?
Yeah, well, cloud services are certainly everywhere. And at CISA, we use cloud-hosted services ourselves, right? The program I mentioned, the CDM program, we have a couple of different services that we operate as shared services, and they didn't start off on the cloud, but they moved to the cloud now, right? Because it's a transition that makes it easier to deploy the services and get those services to the people we want to get them to, right? One of the characteristics of these cloud service providers is they tend to have a single sign-on capability that is native to that service, right? So in OMB's memo M2209, they encourages people to use single sign-on services because these single sign-on services offer modern authentication. So we talked about the authenticator, but what we didn't talk is how you get access to applications once you log into these, right? And you know, I don't want to be too technical, but in the way we used to do it in the network environment, that was called network authentication. And these modern single sign-on capabilities like SAML and particularly OpenID and Connect, those capabilities allow you to be much more secure as you go, as you log into one place, but you go access a different application because those applications use a different session authenticator as they go to each application. So even if someone were to get the authenticator when they, you know, you used in one context, they wouldn't be able to play that in a different context. So that is a really strong security capability that we get from using cloud services. And then I want to address how CISA is actually helping people adopt the cloud securely. And this isn't just in the identity context, right? So CISA is just released a publication that is out on CISA.gov. It's called Secure Cloud Business Applications, SCUBA, and it's a configuration guide that you can, if you're operating cloud services in your government or you're an agency, you can look at this guide and you can go see if your configurations are meeting the recommendations that we have in that guide. And I think you'll see more of those recommendations by CISA as we do our, we advance our own capabilities, we observe what we see as we're doing those services in the cloud, and then we try to get that information out to people to help guide them to make the same good decisions that we hope we're making in our own environment.
Yes, and the use of these cloud services, the use of the application level authentication and so on, the implied thought here then is that thinking has evolved from network security to the assumption that anything can get on the network, but it doesn't matter if it can't authenticate itself to applications and data, which is really what you're protecting, because there's nothing to protect in the network. That's just bits and bytes on a wire. And so we've moved beyond that perimeter thing pursuant to the zero trust idea. Is that a fair way to describe it?
That is a fair way to describe it. In fact, zero trust is making those decisions, making access control decisions that are appropriate for the data you're getting access to, as you mentioned, right? And a lot of the data that we deliver is delivered through applications. So each application will have a different risk tolerance, and you should make access control decisions to those applications, not only based upon the strength of authentication, but one of the things that OMB did mention in their recent M2209 is they would like to have agencies combine signals, device signal with the authentication signal when they make an access control decision. And this is really one of the very great characteristics about zero trust is that although it's described in pillars, the access control decision, the risk decisions you're going to make when you make access, they're not intended to be in isolation. They're intended to take information you know in context, right? So if I know that you're coming from a device that is not jailbroken, by the way, I've seen that device before, and look, that device has an EDR capability on it, and that EDR capability is telling me that it is a, you know, that device is operating well. I can add that risk signal too, and the guy's coming in with the multi-factor authentication. That gives me much higher confidence that I can let you into the application and that you're likely to be operating just as I'd expect you to do, right? This is not the only signal. There's other signals. As we evolve, we'll be taking other signals and combining them. It's kind of the beginning of this journey, but those are two that we think are readily available to agencies to take advantage of now.
Are two of those signals location and time zone, I guess, if you will, because, you know, the device is known to be in the Eastern time zone and 10 minutes later it's in Hong Kong.
Yes, that kind of dynamic has been around quite a while. And I'd say that it's maturing into the kind of, you know, it's table stakes now, right? Where a while ago it was really an extraordinary capability. Nowadays, particularly since the devices report what their location is, it's just so much easier to do that and take that information in.
And we seem to have advanced from the early days of online government, because I was around for them, when the government was not allowed to have cookies, you know, for people that visit the website. Now it seems like agencies need to maintain identities of citizens accessing them precisely for this kind of seamless access and single sign-on. We've moved from having people have no presence in government servers to having a permanent presence, if you will, for whatever, Social Security, to VA benefits, travel benefits, you know, in the trusted travelers, that kind of thing.
It is true, but I don't want to oversell how far we are on that journey. I think that really is the journey of the government interacting with citizens to take services that are maybe deployed in an individual agency and think about whether we can do that across agencies or do some federated capabilities where agencies can refer a person to another place without having them to authenticate again, right? But you're exactly right. We want to be able to make the experience of signing into the government service much better than we have in the past. And the technology has enabled us to do that. And we're quite confident that we can do it in the right manner. And like, that's one of the reasons that OMB has said they want to offer to citizens to use one of these phishing resistant authenticators when they can.
Yeah, you're personally an example of the type of person that might be needing that level of service. Veterans Affairs. You've got a TSP account, I presume, and plus your employment at CISA. And at some point, we all move on to the Medicare world and so on. So you might have 4, 5, 6 places that you would ordinarily access that are all federal by one individual.
That's right. And I think that is the goal. There's some user experience work going on in the government. And I think a lot of the user experience is focusing on doing just that, making it easier for people to access the services and then give the services in a much more clearly defined, communication way method.
So what's your best advice to wind up here for federal CISOs, federal application owners? I mean, it really has to be looked at as a team effort as we head to 2023.
So I'm very bullish on the Zero Trust architecture, right? And when you are in your organization, you're thinking about what you're going to do in the future, think about it from the concept of Zero Trust architectures, right? Because that is going to make your life much better down the road. And one of the things I'll say is I don't think people recognize that when you implement a Zero Trust architecture, it's actually focused on business outcomes anyway, right? Because each application or service that you're delivering through a Zero Trust architecture is really, you're trying to build the risk profile and you're trying to build access capabilities appropriate for that service. And if we do this well and we repeat the things that we can do like FIDO and, you know, phishing resistant authenticators, you know, information about devices, and we do all this well and do it repeatedly, it'll be a much better experience for the user and for the federal employees as well.
And by the way, is there hope for the flip phone generation?
I used to love my flip phone, but I've moved on.
Ross Ford, IT and Information Security Specialist at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Okta on Federal News Network.
The executive order on cybersecurity is a big step towards securing our nation through zero trust. It starts with identity, and Okta leads the way with a modern FedRAMP authorized identity cloud that supports NIST, CISA, and other zero trust standards. Okta centralizes identity and access, delivers strong multi-factor authentication, and integrates all your technologies with a vendor-neutral approach. Learn more at okta.com/fedzerotrust. That's okta.com/fedzerotrust.